Well, welcome back to part two in our interview with Rebecca Roberts and the Smithsonian Associates Fall Events from the Not Old Better show. We have been joined by Rebecca Roberts, who is one of several program coordinators here at the Smithsonian Associates offices in downtown Washington, D.C. I'm thrilled to be talking with Rebecca, and we're going to drill down into a couple of the programs. Rebecca, I want to talk about two specific programs that I noticed, and I mentioned the sleepover during the intro to the show today. And to me, that's certainly reminiscent of the great film series Night at the Museum, starring Ben Stiller and Robin Williams. But it's certainly a unique program. And the other program that I'd like you to talk about is this new program to the Smithsonian Associates titled America's Gilded Age, which from the catalog and everything I've read online is really this wonderful, expansive, complete look at America during this time of great change and transformation socially, culturally. Even the nation's spirit of entrepreneurship is said to be sparked then. And in this new course, again, really this kind of this series of programs, tell us what we'll learn and what we'll experience as we're kind of guided through this really important moment in history.
The museum sleepovers were inspired by Night at the Museum, that spectacular movie where the artifacts and exhibits come to life after hours. I cannot tell you whether or not that actually happens at a sleepover. Good. You'll have to attend for yourself.
That's good.
But they are geared towards 8 to 12-year-olds, so those kind of middle grade kids. I've got kids that age myself. It can be hard to find things to do with them. There's lots of stuff here at the Smithsonian geared towards little kids. And then in high school, there's more opportunities. But in between, sometimes it can be hard to find the right balance for that age kids. So the sleepovers, we have them at the Natural History Museum, the American History Museum, and at Udvar-Hazy, which is that air and space annex out by Dulles Airport. And three kids to every one adult. You can have a smaller ratio than that, but if you've got three kids, you got to bring an adult for each of them. And you go to the museum after it closes. You feel like a secret agent, Paul, when you walk into a closed museum. Great. It is so cool. And there are activities. There'll be a whole museum-wide scavenger hunt, for instance, at the American History Museum. At the Natural History Museum, you're finding all of this different information from all of the different exhibits and filling out a field guide. At the Udvar-Hazy experience, you are filling out a pilot's checklist. You're learning all about flight. But it's not the same thing as a school field trip. It's really meant to be fun. So you're doing some slightly insane things along the way. You're blowing up marshmallows. You're doing ribbon dancing on it. And then at the end of the night, there's a movie or some kind of thing. And then you roll out your sleeping bags and you spend the night there.
That's really great.
At Natural History, you roll them out right under the big blue whale and you sleep in the shadow of the big blue whale. And then in the morning, you get breakfast and off you go. Yeah. So you really do get to sleep at the museum. And those are very popular. We find people coming back again and again. Grandparents bringing their grandkids, especially if the grandkids don't live here in Washington and the grandparents do. It's a behind-the-scenes adventure that those kids don't get if they're coming from Dallas or L.A. or Chicago.
Yeah.
So that's been terrific, and I've actually helped develop the activities at a bunch of them because I have the right age kids, and they are so much fun. I vouch for that for sure. The Gilded Age suite of programs, we offer programming in so many different disciplines that it is nice now and then to kind of have an overarching theme to remind our audiences that they're all interrelated. So the Gilded Age programs are largely centered on art and architecture, but they are also landscape. We've got cocktails of the Gilded Age coming up.
Yeah, I noticed that too. That's
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Literature of the Gilded Age. Uh-huh. I just today was reaching out to a speaker to do the political scandals of the Gilded Age because it was that gilding glossed over as a pretty ugly social underbelly. And it's a time period in American history at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th, where massive changes were happening in all of those disciplines. Art was sort of losing its fussy Victorian edge and edging towards Art Deco, Art Nouveau. Architecture, my goodness, those Newport mansions, those crazy Beaux-Arts palaces, that's all Gilded Age. The novels of Edith Wharton and Mark Twain and so many different writers whose legacies live on because they were spectacular in their own time, but really still have something to say for ours as well. And it focuses, I think, all of these. We have so much information here at the Smithsonian. There's so many things you can learn. It's really nice to occasionally kind of put an umbrella on it and say, hey, we're going to focus on these 25 years right now. And we don't do it that often, put a theme on, but I think we're going to do it more because people have really responded to it. And it gives us an excuse to stretch our muscles a little bit as programmers because you start thinking, well, how could these tie together? You know, what could I do about, you know, if I was thinking of doing a book club program, why don't I make it a Gilded Age book club program and really start exploring that time period in literature as opposed to something else? So it's been a lot of fun. There are a lot of programs in that Gilded Age suite, and I haven't been to as many of them as I would want to, but I want to go to all of them.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to put it, this suite of programs within an overall course. Well, that America's Gilded Age suite of programs really caught my attention. I think the other thing that caught my attention as I looked through this just filled catalog with these great courses was the walking tour, because, and I want to get back to this idea, and that is, you know, it's so nice to kind of be personally engaged in a setting where you're learning with others. And I think that, you know, you can do that indoors and you can do that outdoors. And one of the things I really noticed jumped out at me, as a matter of fact, was this idea of the walking tours, that you're getting out and about. You're really experiencing DC on foot. What is it that our audience can kind of experience and expect in being on the walking tours? Do they go really fast? Do we need to keep up? And, you know, should we put on our roller skates?
In a car?
Well, we offer walking tours and we offer a whole lot of bus tours too. And there are a lot of very good companies doing walking and bus tours in Washington. So what sets us apart is you learn something, right? Yeah. We've always got a study leader, even on the bus ride out to Manassas Battlefield or wherever you're going, there is someone on the bus with you teaching as you go. So the pedagogy is just at a level beyond what you normally expect. The walking tours, we are very aware of who our audience is. If it's going to be a strenuous hike, we absolutely warn you about that in the copy. So you don't suddenly get sprung on, you know, scrambling up a sheer rock face when nobody told you that was going to happen. The city walking tours are at a nice strolling pace. And specifically for the Gilded Age, this city exploded post-Civil War. It went from being a tiny little agrarian backwater to being a world powerhouse in the years after the Civil War. So the Gilded Age was really important for Washington, D.C. specifically. So those walking tours have a lot of information in them. And we also do, for instance, I've got a bus tour coming up of Rock Creek Park. Well, you would think you can just walk through Rock Creek Park, but Rock Creek Park is vast.
Yeah.
And we really don't want to leave people behind who might have mobility issues or might not be able to get out there and hike on their own. So that one, we've built in some options. There are some places where if you really want to go take a mile hike, you absolutely can, and the leader will stay with you. And if you want to stay on the bus, because a mile hiking through Rock Creek Park is a little bit beyond you, you can stay on the bus and meet up at the end. Right. So we try to accommodate everybody's level of fitness, everybody's level of patience. We can't always plan for the weather, but we plan for everything else we get.
Well, you mentioned the bus ride to Manassas, Virginia, to the Civil War battlefields, and we talked a little bit about the sleepover program at Udvar-Hazy Museum near Dulles International Airport, both of which are outside of D.C. So certainly there is a D.C. and kind of adjacent focus. There's kind of this geographically based area around D.C. that, and in D.C. that we're really, you know, offering these great classes about. But there's also an outside of DC focus too. I noticed in the catalog that this year, Smithsonian Associates, and again, you can find out all of this information at the SmithsonianAssociates.org website. You can read about the course descriptions online. You also can view the actual catalog there, as well as sign up and get that catalog sent to you via the mail. But in any event, you find out such great information. And one of the things that I really learned about was this Literary Baltimore tour. I thought that was really great. So that's kind of an outside of DC focus. We know, of course, about the many writers that come to mind when you think about Baltimore, like Edgar Allan Poe and even Francis Scott Key being Baltimore based. But what else can we learn about, and who else can we learn about in this Literary Baltimore tour?
Let me put my glasses on here, Paul. Yep. I am not old, I'm better, but I do need reading glasses. So the Literary Baltimore Tour, which is coming up on September 10th, I think we all associate the literary legacy of Baltimore with Edgar Allan Poe. That might be sort of where your knowledge begins and ends. The list of authors who lived in Baltimore includes F. Scott Fitzgerald and Gertrude Stein and Dashiell Hammett. And of course, Anne Tyler, who still lives there. So, you know, you might associate those writers with other cities, but they all do have Baltimore connections. And so this actually honors Mencken Day, which is named after H.L. Mencken, the sage of Baltimore. And so it's a tour that gets through some of the sites associated with those writers. You visit Poe's grave and the Poe House and Museum. And the speakers are biographers of some of these better known writers. And then there is a German style dinner to honor H.L. Mencken at the West Hamilton Street Club. So it's a day of learning and reading and traveling through Baltimore, which is only, you know, 40 miles up I-95, but maybe not a place that Washingtonians explore as much as we can, except when the O's are playing the Nats.
You just do it all here. You mentioned sports. We've talked about science, history. It really is everything. But I think that the everything includes some of these other programs, these other enrichment, development, and even awakening programs that my audience is going to respond so much to. And I'm referring now to the programs like the Building Better Relationships Through Science, the Your Brain in the Digital Age. And then the other class that jumped out at me was Making the Most of Your Memory. I think these are right up my alley, and certainly they're going to be very appealing to my audience. So who's going to teach these courses? What can you tell us about them? Tell us a little bit about what we can expect and what we'll learn.
That stream of programming is very much a response to what we heard our audience say they wanted. We are 100% responsive to our audiences. These sort of social science, understanding the workings of your own body, things like your memory and how your brain changes in the digital age, people are really curious about that. Mm-hmm. And they don't know where to turn to find out about it.
Right.
First of all, it's a moving target, right? I mean, that information is changing so quickly.
Yeah.
But because we were already their trusted source for learning about art history or about particle physics or whatever it was, they said, we'd like to learn about some of these social science topics from you as well. And so things like Making the Most of Your Memory, which is an evening lecture coming up at the end of September, that is certainly a lot of information about how memory works and maybe how your brain stores memories. But then it's also news you can use in the sense of how to maybe train your own memory to be a little bit more adaptive, or what sort of signs to look for that memory loss is a little bit more concerning than normal or something like that. So it's capitalizing on the popularity of some of the brain games kind of things to keep you sharp, but within the context of a really respected expert instead of some of the pop science that's floating around out there. Your Brain in the Digital Age, which is another really interesting program coming up. It's in October. It's about how our brains are actually changing in the 21st century. So how all of the stimuli that demand our attention so much more than was true just 10 years ago, let alone a generation ago, are actually changing the way our brains are working. And again, well-respected scientists, absolutely trustworthy information, but within in the context of social science that people really want to hear about.
Well, we can't leave you, Rebecca, without talking about some of these celebrity speakers, the kind of the Actresses to Astronauts program. You've mentioned Taraji P. Henson, but there's astronaut Mike Massimino. And then I noticed this really cool, very Washington, D.C. program. Of course, I'm referring to the House of Cards and the Smithsonian Associates program, Frank Underwood's Washington. That just sounds great. Frank Underwood, the fictional character on House of Cards, played by Kevin Spacey. Excellent series. Certainly one of my favorites, a favorite of many in this local area who look at all the monuments and play gotcha about the places that they've been in D.C. and then spot during the airing of the program. So that's a real favorite. But again, Rebecca, these courses, it's really, you know, just so complete. You guys really do it all.
Yes, we are. I'm so glad. glad you noticed. Yeah. And, you know, the popular culture stuff, we're not snobs. We're not going to say that that's beneath our attention. People watch those shows and love those shows, and they want to hear about them. And so we want to bring them to them. And with the reputation that we have built as being a source of reputable knowledge, we can apply that to popular culture. You know that you're going to get something interesting and beyond what you get on Entertainment Tonight when you come to a Smithsonian branded event with those speakers. And what's nice about those programs too is you see these an amazing array of people in the room. You talked about trying to find things to bring your grandchildren to. We actually, interestingly, anecdotally, I've seen more kids at our cooking programs and at our science programs than almost anything else.
My boys have no idea how to cook.
Well, no. Bring them on in.
Yeah, they need it.
And of course, the TV programs have everybody from, well, I don't suppose little kids are watching House of Cards, but everyone from kids on up to great grandparents, especially if something's set in Washington. You know, it's a parlor game to sit around and say, they got that wrong.
Yeah.
There's no metro stop in Georgetown.
Yeah. I've been to that monument.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thanks, Rebecca, again, for joining us on our two-part series, the inaugural episodes of the Smithsonian Associates events here on the Not Old Better Show. Again, I really thank you all for listening. I mentioned it before, but certainly please subscribe to these great free podcasts on iTunes. And of course, become a member. I think you're going to love it. So I want to thank Rebecca Roberts, one of the program coordinators here at Smithsonian Associates. And I just want to say again, this is a great local program. It's available to all. Becoming a member has some real value to it. I'm personally a member, and I think it's been a great program for me and my family. Enjoy with your families. I look forward to seeing you at some of these wonderful events, and join me in singing at the Rock and Roll Chorus. Thanks, Rebecca, again. I appreciate your time.
Oh, Paul, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks to all my guests today, all the help on the podcast, and especially to Media Studio Edit and the great work by Wayne Brown and his team for editing the podcast and making me sound so much better. That is to say, not old, but better. Thanks to all.